Act was that you had the right to go to a court and for that court to determine by a preponderance of the evidence whether you could continue to be held. That is a standard that should be maintained, and I would maintain that standard as president.
Chris Hedges, Rick Santorum versus President Obama.
He's not a politician I usually have much in common with, but this is right. I mean, this is about the egregious destruction of the rule of law. I mean, we have to remember that under the 2001 Authorization to Use Military Force Act, some of this was already happening. Jose Padilla, for instance, was picked up by military courts, held without trial, access to due process, again, a U.S. citizen, went to the Supreme Court, and by that time they handed him over to civilian court to and the Supreme Court never made a ruling on it. But I think that this essentially codifies this very extreme interpretation of this 2001 Act into law. And more importantly, it expands the capacity by the state in terms of defining who is, quote unquote, not only a terrorist, but somebody who is, in their terms, associated forces or substantially supports people defined as terrorists. And of course, the reason for that is that many of these groups that are being attacked in Yemen and other places had nothing to do with 9/11. They didn't even exist when 9/11 happened. And to expand this into the civilian population of the United States. And I think, Amy, one of the most sort of disturbing aspects of this is that the security establishment came out against it. The CIA, the FBI, the Attorney General, the Director of National Intelligence, none of them wanted it.
President Obama said he was going to veto it.
President Obama said he was going to veto it. But we now know from leaks out of Levin's office that that's because the executive branch wanted to decide. They wanted the power to decide who would be tried, who would be granted exemptions. It wasn't actually about the assault against due process. And I think we have to ask, if the security establishment did not want this bill, and the FBI Director Mueller actually goes to Congress and says publicly they don't want it, why did it pass? What pushed it through? And I think without question, the corporate elites understand that things certainly economically are about to get much worse. I think they're worried about the Occupy movement expanding. And I think that in the end, and this is a supposition, they don't trust the police to protect them. And they want to be able to call in the army. And if this bill goes into law and it's slated to go into law in March, they will be able to do that.
I want to ask you a quick question about a comment Texas Governor Rick Perry made last night. In a related but not exactly the same thing as what you're talking about. He said on Sunday, the Obama administration has gone over the top in criticizing Marines who are videotaped urinating on Afghan corpses.
What bothers me more than anything is this administration and this administration's disdain all too often for our men and women in uniform. Whether it was what they've said about the Marines. Now, these young men made a mistake. They obviously made a mistake.
You're talking about urinating on the corpses.
They made a mistake that the military needs to deal with, and they need to be punished. But the fact of the matter, the fact of the matter is this. When the Secretary of Defense calls that a despicable act, when he calls that utterly despicable, let me tell you what's utterly despicable. Cutting Danny Pearl's head off and showing the video of it. Hanging our contractors from bridges. That's utterly despicable.
That was Rick Perry, Texas governor. Chris Hedges, you were a longtime war correspondent.
Well, you know, when people are killed on a battlefield and those who are deemed the enemy are at best treated like human refuse, but usually they're treated like trophies. They're often dismembered. I mean, one of the first things you do after you kill an enemy combatant is go through their pockets. And in war after war that I covered, the desecration and mutilation of corpses was extremely common. So I think that what we saw was a window into the reality of war, one that has essentially been censored from public view.
I want to thank you both for being with us, Chris Hedges, Carl Mayer. That does it for our broadcast. You can go to our website at democracynow.org to get a copy of the show. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berger, Nate Feltzer, Montana Meshach, and Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB. The time is 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this glorious Tuesday evening, joined once more by Kyle over in Seattle.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and I think it's coming out over the board. I'm pretty sure. Speak some more.
Well?
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, we got snow out here.
Yeah, about that. Every time I talk to you lately, you rub in the fact that you're getting snow in Seattle and we're getting nothing here in New York. And, it's charming.
I mean, something's on the way for you.
I don't know about that. I don't know if snow is ever going to arrive here. It's been a lousy winter so far. Compared to last winter when we were up in Scandinavia, even when we were in Scandinavia enjoying the snow there, people here were enjoying the snow because it was snowing everywhere apparently last year. But this year has been a real washout. It's raining today. It's raining. We've got this thing where it gets really cold and then it's dry and then it gets warmer and all of a sudden the precipitation comes, but by then it's rain, and we're going to go through this dance a few more times, I think, and then it'll be spring. Kyle, you there? Hello, Kyle.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. All right, well, you're supposed to be talking, too.
I know, I agree. I mean, I don't think spring's that close yet, though. We're still in it, and I think you're going to get some soon.
I sure hope so, I really do. Okay, so tonight we have the continuation of our voyage from this summer. The last 2 weeks we were bitching about Belarus. In fact, that's what the feature was actually called.
Right.
Now, this week, we're on the same train. However, we have crossed over into Ukraine. And the thing is that we're still bitching about Belarus because, let me explain. When you go to a country like that and you experience it for several days, there's a whole lot to bitch about. And it does take two countries of train travel to get it all out of your system. I had been sick. We had been stressed out by just all the hassles of just daily life, getting food, walking around, figuring out what to do, being yelled at for every little infraction that we do wrong. You know, it's a wonderful trip back to the Soviet Union. That's what Belarus basically is. It's amazing to go there. It's great to talk to people and learn things, but it does take a toll.
Yeah, and it helps to have someone, and you have to process it. You have to go through that, and once you get some comforts and you can sit and process it and watch a little bit of it go by, and that's the real magic. You know, that's when you get inspired and start thinking about what kinds of things you want to capture, what stories and experiences are really cool to bring back. And I think we get into that a little bit here.
Yes.
There is some kvetching, but I think it's important because the discomforts sort of color the entire experience. And I don't know. I had a good time. I'd be interested to hear this and recall exactly what it was like. It was quite a fun ride. I think we were happy.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was definitely a fun ride overall, and literally and figuratively, because you know, here we are in the train, and you hear all the train noise, and that's just an experience in itself. These long train rides that take you from country to country are something you have to experience. But we do tell a bunch of stories. A lot of experiences happen. It's good that we record it when it's fresh on our minds, because a lot of this stuff I'm listening to and I forgot about it. I forgot, oh, wow, that really happened. That's true. I remember that experience. We do talk about the guy whose name we shall not mention, who was taking pictures. And we bleeped his name out again, because it actually is the case in Belarus when someone is doing something that's sort of anti-government, and in this case he was taking pictures of a light bulb that made fun or would seem to make fun of Lukashenko, the dictator's name. I mean, that's his informal title, the dictator, but everybody knows he's a dictator. So we mentioned his name a couple of times, so I figured it's probably better to be safe than sorry, and certainly in his case. So we just bleep that out. I just wanted to explain that in case people hear a weird noise in the middle of all this. That's what that's all about.
But yeah, I mean, that's just an example of the ability that when you're there, you have access and you can actually really, you know, get to know people. And we did get to know him. He introduced himself and explained exactly what he was interested in. And I think it was architecture. And I don't know, he was a student. And I don't know, those experiences are great because you can connect and see, you know, just a glimpse of, like, what your average young person is like there. So it was really cool to get his sense of humor and smile and share the humor and just the wink and the nod there. It was really cool to talk to someone like that.
You meet people, too, just by walking around the street and taking pictures or just obviously not being from around there and walking around and kind of looking at things. People come up to you. People talk about various things, want to know where you're from, want to hear your story. And that's really one of the cool things about traveling like this.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. We do really choose to get lost in some of these places. I mean, you really got to explore. You got to look around and find the off streets, find the interesting parts of town, the things that draw you mm-hmm. for whatever reason, even if it's a complete whim. I mean, it's that's part of exploring, and so I think we really tried to do that because we don't have as much experience. I'd never ever been to like places like Ukraine or Belarus. So
well, Ukraine was a first for me too. I'd been to Belarus twice before, but Ukraine was one of the new frontiers, and it was you can feel the anticipation as we're now in the country in this particular segment.
Right.
And just looking forward to new things to do and just to being in, and it's hard to say this, a more westernized, free country, or so it seems, going into Ukraine from Belarus. These are two countries that used to be part of the Soviet Union, so it's just interesting to do that. It reminds me of when I came from North Korea and went into China, and China felt like the West when I was going back into China, because North Korea was so dark and China was so Times Square-ish.
Yeah, the train station though was a little less less high tech. It was beautiful though, the one in Kiev. But coming in, I think it was late when we got in, and it was a bit older. But once you got around town, you got a sense of the dichotomy between like technology and size between Minsk and Kiev.
I felt comfortable in Kiev almost as soon as we arrived. It just felt sort of New York-y.
Yeah.
And one of these cities that things are open late. I remember we were looking for food late at night, and we just sort of figured, you know, we're never going to find it because this always happens where we're looking too late and things close. I remember Zurich where you couldn't find food after 10 o'clock. But we actually did quite well. I think a couple of blocks from where we were staying, we found this. I still think it might have been a dream. It was this all-night cafe with loungy couches and just a really relaxed atmosphere. And it was exactly what we were looking for.
And, like, many kinds of food.
Everything we could possibly want. I think they had sushi. They had all kinds of beer. And it was just an amazing mix. And it was right there. And it was perfect.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know, the types of things that were in Kiev were very, much more comforting, I think, than the types of exploration in Belarus. And I think you get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do.
From what we've been able to share in this. So.
In a way, going to, I don't want to be too hard on Belarus, but, well, you kind of have to. You have to be honest. In a way, it's good to go to a hellish place because it makes the other places afterwards really seem a lot more pleasant. Not that Kiev wouldn't seem pleasant on its own, but there's something you have to see it all. You have to go to the places that don't have all the comforts of home, and have maybe kind of like a sullen attitude, which I think is a good way to characterize Minsk.
People often fly from point to point, and I think the ground travel is really cool because it's a slower transition, and we get to process the experience.
Yeah, I mean, train is the way to go. You could probably do it cheaper for bus, by bus, but it's not nearly as much fun because you can just sort of walk up and down in the train, explore all the cars, meet people, go to the cafe. We talk about all this in the piece ahead. You can't do that on an airplane. You can't do that on a bus. It's and of course, trains are so cheap over there too. In Eastern Europe, trains are incredibly cheap. I think it cost us maybe about $40 to get from Belarus to Ukraine or something like that. It was we had that whole big incident at the train station where we had to argue because they gave us the wrong tickets at the wrong time and just back and forth, and nobody spoke English and we didn't speak their language. But eventually, we worked it out. It was the better part of the afternoon. But we worked it out, and we had a great story.
It depends on your definition of cost.
Yeah, well, it was an investment. We sweated quite a bit. But,
we ended up, we won by standing in by our position in that whole argument.
Yeah, and we kept our cool. And we didn't say, I'm an American, you can't treat me this way. No, we did it like the natives do it, which is basically stand in line for a long time and argue for a long time and eventually get something, which might not be exactly what you wanted, but it's something. And, I always used to ask, what is it that people are arguing about all the time when they're buying train tickets in Russia and Eastern Europe? Because it seems like everybody goes up to the booth and has this yelling session with the person behind the counter. And it's like, don't you just want to buy a ticket, get it, and leave? It should be simple. But now I realize, okay, they give you the wrong ticket. You look at the ticket, you realize it's the wrong ticket, then you have to argue with them and figure out who gives whom money and... It just goes on and on and on, and it's after a while, I guess, you sort of start to enjoy it.
Yes, they approximate, I think.
All right. Listen, we're about ready to go into the piece about Ukraine. Any memories you want to share before we do that?
Oh, wow. It was, the independence was amazing, seeing the celebration and the timing. There was a fervent atmosphere of just stuff going on and...
Well, let's not give it away because Independence Day was coming in Belarus, in Ukraine. We hadn't gotten there yet.
But also real life just going by.
Right.
Kind of having to say, hey, these protests is part of life. Seeing how people were dealing with things was very interesting, especially around the holiday.
A very politically charged atmosphere awaited us in Kiev, in Ukraine. It's still like that now, but that's something we're going to get into later on in this particular segment and also in future weeks, too, because we did do some recording on the streets as well. So what I'd like to do now is join us on the train, which has now left Belarus, has entered Ukraine. It's on its way to Kiev. And I think our mood will be decidedly more cheerful than it was last week, as we actually made it out of the country in one piece. So we'll talk a little bit later, but let's Go to Ukraine now.
We have lights now.
We have lights. Well, lights just
they
came on.
Finally turned them on. The Ukraine has lights. Well, do you think they put up the they maybe have a thing that goes up and there's overhead lines now?
Well, maybe. You think we were running on diesel before?
Just diesel. Maybe these don't have the generator things that we saw?
Yeah, maybe that's it. But, you know, lights turn on for a little while at one place.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell if we have anything overhead, but we definitely have lights.
I definitely don't have cell phone service. Not yet, anyway. Yeah, I see the lights.
That's a solid light switch.
Not as solid as this.
Wow.
We each have lights.
We could close the window, too, if we wanted.
You don't want to slam it, though.
Oh, you want me to open it again?
I think you should open it again, but not slamming it open. I just like the sound of the train, you know?
But then the audio will be too contrived. You know, it'll sound like we make stuff up, you know?
I think you should stop worrying about the audio so much and just start worrying about the content.
Okay.
Because
so
honestly,
where
Kyle...
Where were we? I just put my bag up.
From the ratings we've been getting, the reviews and stuff like that, the
right.
content's a little light on your end lately. And
oh!
We need to... I'm just saying, before we go on air...
That was the Nielsen. That was that Nielsen email
Arbitron,
you got.
Actually.
Oh, Arbitron. Okay. Yeah. All right.
You see, you don't even know
Nielsen's,
the terminology.
Yeah, that's TV.
That's
part of
the problem.
I'm such a star now that I forget.
You don't think you need to be bothered with this stuff? And you know.
Well, I'm learning. I study Justin Bieber. I really want to be the megastar I can be.
I just want to be able to speak to you, like, not through your agent and through you, because we do have these conversations occasionally.
Yeah.
All right, and so it's important not to get too far.
I'll work on content. Just let me know when we start. And,
you're in control of the controls.
All right.
So I've already had a beer from down the hall.
Yeah, and, me too.
I can't.
Let me see. Do we have levels? Yeah. You know what? We did start recording.
Oh, really?
Imagine that.
Oh, this is going to be one of those things where, oh my God, we were recording. We didn't know it. And we were, like, actually having a real conversation, except it was actually, like, planned out. We're gonna actually try to do that again.
Yeah, but we didn't swear or anything, so I think we can just start. So, whenever you want to start.
I'm so sorry. that was the part that wasn't supposed to go over the air. Kyle, are you still there, Kyle?
Yeah, I don't think, I don't think you should play that part.
No, this is the fault of the intern, and I'm sorry. It's very unprofessional. That should not have gone over, and we were not actually bickering as badly as that might have sounded. We just sometimes, you know, long train ride, long travel, and the tensions might sometimes get the better of you. All right, you know what? This kind of caught me off guard. What we're going to do is we have some Ukrainian radio that we recorded while over in Kiev. Let's go into that for a second, and I'll find the right starting point. Apologies to everybody.
Полеты первых ласточек, и ты усталая придешь к себе. Я не волить не стану.
сниться, хоть снишься в ночь на пятницу.
All right, apologies for the false start before. We are now ready with Off the Wall in Ukraine.
First of all, we are in Ukraine. We are happy. But it's mostly because we're no longer in Belarus. We're happy.
Thank God.
I'm not sure about Ukraine yet. Ukraine is nice. We had our passport stamped and all that stuff, and they took their little form. But so far, it's just been a lot of woods. But yeah, Ukraine, oh my God. Oh my God, what the hell, man? Those people, there's something wrong with them. Not all Belarusian people.
When right.
I say Ukraine, I meant to say Belarus.
Yeah, Belarus.
Belarus. People in Belarus. It's just, there's something about the culture, something about the way people do things that just lends itself to hostility, rudeness.
They're a-holes.
Bureaucracy. Yes, you could say they're a-holes. But it, you know, I don't want to generalize too much. There weren't very nice people there. But the system, man, the system is broken. It needs to be fixed.
Yeah, like 4.5 nice people.
Yeah. That we saw.
Yeah.
That but half a man was really nice.
Yeah. Okay, so where did we leave off?
Well, oh, you mean in the last conversation?
We were talking about... No, wait, I got it. Whoa. Riding a motorcycle.
Yeah, people ride motorcycles here. They could do anything in the Ukraine here.
Yeah. It's like some kind of new free land of some kind.
Wow. Well, it's weird because, like, the two countries, Belarus and Ukraine, used to be part of the Soviet Union.
Right.
So they used to not even be a border like when we just passed.
Right. And they were pretty serious. That was a border.
Mm-hmm.
If there ever was one.
Yeah, there was. I mean, we were there for... Well, we've been crossing borders now for, like, the last hour and a half at least, right?
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't like crossing into Belarus from Poland where we had to change the bogies and all that stuff, but it's still a serious border.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the exit customs guys were less serious than Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine sent two different dogs through and inspected, actually asked us to open one of our bags, and they were... serious. They wanted to know who is coming from Belarus, but I think it helps that we're Americans, so yeah.
Yeah, they kind of let us off pretty easy, I think.
Yeah.
We don't really know what to expect, but we've been reading about Kiev in Ukraine, and it just seems like so much more is happening there than in Minsk.
Yeah, I've been focusing on the history, but mm-hmm. maybe you have more information about what's going on right now. I hear that we're going to be there for Independence.
Yeah, I didn't know about this, but we just found out that Independence Day is the day after tomorrow, And that's independence from the Soviet Union. So that started in 1991, I believe. And so Wednesday is going to be a very interesting day.
Yeah.
I guess we'll get some sound then and find out what's happening. It's also really interesting because, as we speak, the former prime minister is still in prison.
Yeah.
I think she's still in prison.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of craziness going on.
Maybe we can help. Maybe she'll be released. We'll cover some of the stink. We'll get some pictures. We'll send them to the AP and we'll free her.
Wait a minute.
And we'll be responsible for everything.
You're on the side of the people that want to free her? I'm on the side of the people that want to imprison her.
Oh, you're going to be on that side of the street.
Yeah, I'm going to be on that side of the street.
Right, because they're camped out.
I believe in democracy. I believe in what Ukraine stands for in the first place.
I believe in the Orange Revolution because I like
I believe
orange.
In the Orange Revolution. Orange is my color.
Orange is the color of chaos.
And I just came from the chaos camp, thank you very much.
Yeah. Wait a minute, what side are you on?
I know what side I'm on.
All right, can we get back to the point? Where were we?
We
were talking about Belarus and the just leaving. What was it? The ticket experience and getting that all sorted out.
We won the ticket experience.
We got some sleep. We finally got the cafeteria meal with the crazy pizza and all of that. Oh, good God.
And meanwhile, I've got some kind of crazy thing going on where, you know, I get these, like, crazy cramps every few hours that
yeah,
are really painful.
I'm
scaring me too because yeah. It's just it feels like I got gas, but it's like in a weird kind of a way that just sort of like circulates throughout your abdomen, and it all started after I had that beer on the train with these crazy Russian people.
Right, and her chicken minced chicken breaded things.
I apparently have just entered Ukraine on my phone. Yeah, look, I have life and a smiley face is the phone company.
Yeah, I love the
I have never seen that before.
The phone company has an emoticon in their alpha tag.
An emoticon in the alpha tag. Oh, wow. So I just got a message. Probably a message from my local carrier back home warning me not to make phone calls because they're expensive and sending me a text message to tell me that.
Yeah, they do that. Isn't that annoying? I think I'm going to... I have the same carrier, actually. I'm going to send a text, but I want to send one home. Because I'm so thrilled to be in Ukraine.
Right.
As I said, I have a little bit of family heritage to look up here. And just, again, the freedom. I feel a lot more free to speak. Just that we've passed through the customs. And that was interesting. It took quite a long time, but we've made it. All the chaos of buying train tickets and figuring things out. We can put it behind us and reflect, and it truly is crazy. There were great things about Belarus. It's very clean.
Name one. Oh, okay. That clean? All right. Yeah. What else?
They hung on to a lot of their architecture and kept some of the Soviet relics around.
They didn't tear down the buildings. Okay,
they didn't tear things down.
Give them credit for that, not tearing down buildings. You know what? I can guide you to a mental institution near Stony Brook that's done the same thing. You know? Kings Park Mental Institution. Go over there. Check them out. They haven't torn that building down either, but I'm not going to be throwing flowers at them anytime soon. I'm being kind of hostile, I know. I got sick there.
I'm
okay,
glowing,
I was feeling
and
bad.
I'm, yeah, okay.
And it's just too much being yelled at and bureaucracy.
But how do we sum it up, E? Come on. I mean, how do you describe abject misery with a place that's great because it's different and it's held on to all these things? I mean, really, how do you impart that to people? Because it was such a drag. I mean, it stunk.
Yeah. I mean, the only way I could do that is probably to scream somewhat, but I don't want to do that on the train. But you definitely need to scream after you get out of Belarus. We need to do that later.
Yeah, I think we should have a sound screaming. We'll find
really,
some woods,
yeah.
Maybe some other people to come and cheer us on, and we'll do some screaming.
I mean, just imagine the whole Soviet Union used to be like that. You know, very similar, with the drab architecture and the bureaucracy and just the socialism being rammed down your neck all the time. It can drive free-thinking people crazy after a while, no question about it.
And even the people that were nice, it was like, they could barely be that nice.
Yeah.
Because they have to go right back to their sort of... I don't know. Their routine, what they're used to, what they're going to expect, and it felt closed, mm-hmm. as open as it was. There's all of this propaganda posters and.
Although, on that subject, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be propaganda-wise.
Well, how bad did you think it was going to be?
Well, I thought there were going to be posters of Lukashenko everywhere.
I didn't see one.
Yeah, and I didn't see one either. I've seen them before, but I didn't see them this time. I saw him on TV a few times. He looks so benevolent, so nice and kind. Of course, that's how he's supposed to look.
Right.
But he doesn't look like the evil military dictator that the West portrays him to be. But, of course, we don't know for sure what exactly is going on. I do know that, and we've said this before, based on the amount of youth in the country and just the way they are expressing themselves and being individuals, that kind of thing isn't going to hold forever, if it's holding at all. And this place will be very different, certainly within a few years, and radically different beyond that. So I'm not really worried. I think they'll eventually get to where they need to be.
Well, I think it's a lot of what we've said before as well, that with, you know, the ruling powers, that generation has got to listen to parts of, if not the entirety of, the next generation. Because if they lose control of small factions or continue to impose these silly things, and these silly things, that the article recently we were reading about how clapping at the wrong time because it was sarcastic. You can't put a law on sarcasm. You can try, but you're going to lose.
We should explain the sarcastic laughing. Basically, Lukashenko was giving a speech, and people started rhythmically clapping. And basically what that means is that the whole meter of his speech was interrupted, and he basically lost, like, where he was going with what he was talking about. It was very embarrassing to him. So they banned rhythmic clapping, or clapping at the wrong time. Sarcastic clapping, as you say. Or laughing, or, various things that are meant to embarrass the leader.
And the thing is, that's all the people have. That's really all they have to go against it. But that stuff's going to escalate, and it's going to change. There's a story you read in some of the books about people not going to the movie theaters.
In the Soviet Union, that used to happen, where people would basically communicate in code to each other, saying, I'm too busy to go to the movies this weekend. I have too much work to do.
And our neighbors are on vacation.
And it spread, and nobody would go to the movies. And going to the movies was a way of showing support for the regime by seeing all the propaganda films. But if nobody was there, that was a protest. But how do you arrest somebody for not going to the movies?
Yeah,
you know, it's ingenious.
And it was all veiled, and, I'm busy. I'm a hardworking member of the party, and, I can't have that kind of leisure in my life, and everybody does it, and it becomes a form of civil disobedience, basically.
And that's what people need, to be able to figure out ways of doing that, and ways of defying the authorities and being individuals.
Yeah, and my hope for young people, anyone, people in Belarus and other countries that are experiencing similar revolutions right now, is that, that stuff builds, you organize, you see, you communicate, you see what other people are talking about, you think in a global way, and you start mobilizing, you use creative ways like what we've mentioned, those examples, and I'm sure there's more.
Or remember,
our friend that was photographing something. That's media. He's creating media that's funny.
You remember that that it doesn't change overnight. That you want something to happen, but maybe there seems to be no effect. It builds. It takes time. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of people, but it does happen. It does happen from people continuously trying.
And here's my one bit, because I do want to be invited back to Belarus at some point. I will credit the regime if they've changed at all. If Lukashenko's image has taken somewhat of a back seat, and it's more about the people and the country itself having unity and being passionate about their closed nature and being unified in like a nationalistic way. If there's one thing, it's changed. I think if there's one thing you could compliment them about is that, look, they've addressed that. They've sort of changed the style. There's some, even just a little bit, some Western businesses some rebellion, you know, some young people that are exposed to other things and trying to act out in different ways to differentiate themselves. And one thing I did notice, and I think this is something they could focus on, is sport. And this is going to come up with the Euro 2012, but also in a lot of what we saw, there were huge banners on some of the buildings. One side of the building would have military stuff, but the other side had the same logos, the same nationalistic stuff, but it was with sport.
They had a countdown clock to the Olympics in London, yes, 2012.
Yes.
They're really excited about
yes.
this.
Yes, and one of the largest sports centers that was actually very close to us was a hockey rink, and hockey is very, very big. In Belarus.
It's a national sport.
It is the national sport. And so, and honestly, I love sport. I like bicycling and
you love sport, not sports. Difference.
Right, I like sport.
Yes.
Absolutely. Gymnasium, I mean, all the way back. I love, you know, the use of the human body and the you know, competition and how that can kind of bring people that otherwise would not speak. It can bring them together, and it's competition that is not violent. I know the Olympics probably had a little bit more violent history, but nowadays the modern concept of sport is beautiful in that it shows people using their bodies in beautiful ways, and it's competition without death. And I think war and war making tends to be a little on the violent and bloody and you know, death side. There's ultimatums with that. With sport, you can come back and try again. And there are second chances. And there's underdogs. And all of this beauty in the humanness of us. Across countries, across
yeah,
borders.
It's a universal language.
Right. It's using your body and that prowess to the extreme and in a competitive way. And I think that's beautiful. And I encourage young people in Belarus and the country as a whole to really focus on sport and greeting the world in that way. Yeah, you have your nationalistic ways, the things you want to hold on to, but sport is an incredible way to be diplomatic and to see the world. Maybe a young person that they can't get an internship outside of Belarus, they couldn't leave for the life of them, but if they're an athlete, maybe they can get to visit another country and get out to represent where they come from in that kind of beautiful way. And then as a side effect or benefit, they get to see the world and see other people. And that, I think, is the one thing that I think maybe the one thing that changed that perhaps you didn't see when you were seeing other sorts of propaganda. So that's an indication to me that some of this administration is listening. They're changing. They're agile in some way. Will it be enough? Don't know. Maybe that's probably foregone. Not something we could say now. But it's indicative of a focus other than militarism, and I think that's something the world could use.
Yeah, amen, amen, definitely. There are other ways of getting out there as well, not just sport, but educational ways, ways of just traveling, spreading information on the internet.
And technology.
Like that.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
If you're an individual, somebody with intelligence, creativity, there's something for you to do, something for you to reach out to the rest of the world with. And it doesn't matter where you're from, you'll find a way.
And, you know, just because everybody else is doing one thing doesn't mean, you know, you can't embrace other things or other cultures. And I think that's crucial to continue that, even if it's really hard in your own country and in your own community. And I strive for that, and I've sought out communities myself, even in a place as free as we would say, you know, as free as the U.S.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm glad I went to Belarus again. I hope you're happy that you went through the whole procedure.
I'm happy and honored to have been a guest in the country and a companion of yours. I live for that kind of craziness, and I got a lot of wonderful art. I mean, beautiful pictures, and in a lot of ways, I told you this several times, that was something I was sticking close to just to keep me sane, protecting my craft and focusing on that even when it was a bit crazy or tough or I felt sort of homesick. I just held on to doing that. So I think it's going to be exciting to see some of the images we got and
other impressions, or at least, it's just really, it's still something we're processing, and I think in the next couple of days, I'll continue to appreciate having done it. At the time, it was difficult. It was not a big vacation that Disney provides, or you know, some dream destination. I don't know.
I felt like Disney played a hand in it sometimes, though.
Yeah, a little. The Magic Kingdom.
It was the Magic Kingdom.
in weird ways, but truly, after having gone through it and safely gotten out, you know, fine. I would go again, but maybe with more structure, maybe with some contacts and some people to work with instead of so independently. Because I think without that structure, you feel kind of lonely. You feel kind of out in the dust a bit. But having the perspective, I think it's going to be an experience I'll never regret. I mean, good God, it's such a strange place, and I don't know how many people I know that can say they've been there. And I've never gotten a visa, and there's so many new things about it.
Yeah, you got a visa, you got a little card that you had to hold on to, and we got yelled at for not filling it out right, and then we had to hold on to the other half of the card for when we left, and thank God we had that, otherwise we would have big problems.
Yes.
And, we played that game, and now we're out, and now we're here, and we can sort of feel like we're closer to home.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like we're in much more Western culture, and there's absolutely nothing to really drive that point home other than the fact that we're not in Belarus.
Yeah, but we are still on a train that technically came from Belarus. We've done well, though. You've made friends with the car's conductor. I'm not sure what the actual word is. It's a different word than that. But basically, every car has a woman who basically manages the car, and you can buy things from her. You can buy tea, you can buy beer, you can buy various cold cuts and things like that. Unfortunately, we had how much Belarusian money did we have? Something like
about 600.
No, it was more than that. It wasn't like 1,000 or something. It was
not even. We do not have 1,000. It is less than 1,000, and that's why we can't buy anything, because basically anything is like about 4,000 rubles or 3,000 rubles. You're not going to get much for less than 1,000. Recall, one token for the train was 1,000. It was 990 rubles for a train token, which is 20 cents. So 5,000 is at least a dollar. 7,000 being a euro.
100, 350, oh, you're 400, counting 450. This person wrote two zeros after the 50 thinking I'd make it 5,000, but no, that didn't work.
So that's
5,000 is a dollar. And you know what? I lost count now. 100, 200.
Seriously, it's less than
600. 300. Okay, yeah, no, you're right. It's less than
nothing.
600.
Nothing.
And since 5,000 is a dollar,
it's like 17 cents, 15 cents.
So you went down the corridor to try and score us some tea or something, and
she flipped through every bill, shook her head the entire time.
A whole wad of bills, and it was no good. And then you had a single dollar, and she took that.
Yeah, she was asking for dollars, and I said, okay, I actually do. I have a $1 bill right here. I've never been so happy to have a dollar. I came back with some wafers, some cookies, and she brought two cups of hot tea. Two nice glasses of hot tea with sugar, and all of it cost a dollar.
Yeah.
I tried to give her two. She was like, no, $1. Gave me the dollar back. And we have since gone back, and we got a bit of a snack because the border wait was incredibly long, and we were getting a bit peckish. So,
and I thought maybe that she might leave at the border, and then we would have either nobody or somebody that wouldn't work with us with dollars. So we only had about, what, $4 between us?
Four ones,
in ones, but I had a 20. So I handed her the 20. And she was a little perturbed because she was saying it only cost 10, what we were asking for. What we were asking for were two beers, two packages of cold cuts, a package.
A little lunchbox.
A little lunchbox filled with what? Crackers?
Trail mix, juice, some more cookies, a chocolate bar, and some. She also gave me some cream cheese or like a spread to put on the crackers.
And so and we still have a bunch of that left. But I gave her 20. I was happy with that because that was a lot. But she came back later on, about 5 minutes later, with 2 fives. She actually found change somewhere on the train.
Somewhere. She found two $5 bills.
Yeah, and I've half a mind to go down there again and get more stuff.
Yeah, me too. I think maybe one more beer we could do.
One more beer. We could certainly do some more tea. I don't know, maybe another snack of some sort.
Maybe.
But considering, we came out of Belarus, we couldn't get anything.
Yeah, we're not going to get in for about 4 more hours.
Yeah. We don't arrive until after midnight. We left at 11:20, no, 11:31. And it felt so good to get on that train.
Yeah. Buying the tickets the day before felt good, because, hey, we're in the system and we're leaving.
Yeah, buying the tickets almost for a day before sort of felt like the incredible craziness we went through. But this is the last train ride we have to take before we actually fly back.
That's right.
Unless we take a train to the airport or something. But
Not like this.
Not like this. So this is kind of a good feeling to just know that we're on our way to our last destination on this voyage. And from all reports, Kiev is going to be very interesting, very exciting.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled. The culture, the youth culture, and the political things that are going on. The fact that we're going to be arriving so close to their Independence Day, which is an enormous celebration, just spectacular, is really wonderful timing on our part. And I'm going to make it mean that they're celebrating our arrival.
I think that's the best way to interpret it. And we'll certainly get the most out of it and hopefully meet some people, learn some things about the country.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, from the train from Belarus to Ukraine, we bid you adieu for now. We'll return soon.
So long.
There was a scream at the very end of that. I don't know if you heard that, Kyle, but as soon as we said goodbye, somebody in the train screamed.
No, I didn't catch it.
Yeah. I don't think we caught you either. Hang on. There's something wrong with this dial here. Can you speak again?
I didn't catch the last part of that.
Okay, you're barely coming over. But we got you now. It was fun. Being on a train is fun. If people have not done that, I don't mean being on the Long Island Railroad. I mean being on a train that crosses borders and goes from one country to another, and where life is occurring, where people do scream sometimes, but you also have adventures just trying to buy things like we did, scrambling for as much cash as you can just to get a snack, which is the best snack in the world because you're on a train and you're in a foreign country, and everything is just an adventure.
Absolutely, and it's there's comforts there, and it's a whole world, and you kind of tap into this like historical thing. People have been riding trains for a long time, and it's a cool way to get around and see places that aren't on other forms of transportation, or it's just a different way to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Although over there, it's how everybody gets places, and by over there, I mean, pretty much every place in Europe, from England all the way over to Russia, people are taking trains constantly. And, it's just so much more efficient, so much more pleasant. I really wish that we get our act together and repopulate this country with more trains. High speed and non-high speed. They don't all have to be high speed, but, you know, as long as they go places, I think that's important, and it makes traveling less of a stressful thing where you have to go through airports and deal with planes and things like that. I just read a story while this was playing. In fact, I read this story. I don't know if you heard about this, but there was an airline, I think it was British Air, last couple of days, they accidentally played a recording saying the plane was about to make an emergency landing in the middle of the ocean. And first of all, I didn't know that they had recordings for that. It seems like that's the kind of thing where somebody should come on live and tell you what's going on. It should not be a recording saying, attention, we are about to crash into the ocean. Yeah, it's. I'd like to hear it, not while I'm on the plane, but I'd like to hear what the tone of the person's voice. It was just that, British underground female that tells you not to smoke in the elevator, if it's that kind of a recording, or if it's something with a little bit more animation. So that kind of thing doesn't really happen on trains. Does it, Kyle? Do we lose Kyle?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Are you distracted or something?
No, I'm listening. No, okay. That is true. I was speaking from, my point of view, which would be someone who's from suburbia,
mm-hmm.
by comparison, and I really think, even with things like toll roads out here, we're getting all kinds of chips, and, I know you guys have them MyPass system or whatever.
EasyPass, yes. Right.
And all that, and like the cameras and the TSA and the airports and all of that. Trains are really a comfortable way to go.
Yeah, and that holds true no matter what part of the continent you're in. We talk about all the differences with Belarus, but still they have trains. When we were in Switzerland last winter, trains everywhere. It's just a cultural thing that I think we could really benefit from, where not everybody is constantly driving every place all the time. And it actually encourages you to go to other places and visit people or commute or something like that. Seems like people are always doing that over there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, go ahead.
I would like to do that about the airplane thing. I think I could do that voice. I could.
Well, I wasn't calling for auditions. I kind of just wanted to hear what it actually sounded like. And how many other recordings do they have too? You know, attention, the cockpit has just been taken over by armed terrorists, or maybe there's different versions of that. Maybe, you know, terrorists with knives or whatever. But how many different recordings do they have for disaster? That's what I'd like to know.
I want to start practicing that in the shower. I'm going to put it on my voicemail or something.
Okay, you do that. That'll be fun. But, you know, if they have a recording for landing in the ocean, they must have one for landing on land, too. You know, emergency landing on land. So the mind boggles. But the fact that they actually played that by accident, imagine what those poor people 45,000 feet up were going through. And it took them 30 seconds to say, oh, you can disregard that, by the way, and duty-free will be coming through in a minute.
Or peanuts, anyone?
Yeah, really.
You panic.
What's the biggest crisis that you face on a train that you can recall?
Your cabin mate, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Remember the guy that we had to share the cabin with on the way from Poland to Belarus, right?
Correct.
He had sort of taken over the entire place. We got on the train. He had already been sleeping there. I think he came from Prague on the train beforehand, right. But there was no space for seats. It was just basically his bedroom, and we had to sort of move things around.
What is it when you start identifying with your captor?
Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, why did we start identifying with him?
Yeah, I think so. I think he had the upper hand the whole time.
Well,
what we thought.
He was up to something, because he spoke perfect English. He came from, did he come from Belarus or did he come from Russia? I think it was Belarus. I'm sorry, what?
Moscow.
It was Moscow, okay. He had to do something. He was a spy of some sort, I'm certain. They kept asking us questions, and I sort of didn't want to get into it.
He was from the old world. But I do want to say, with trains, there are accidents, and there are things in the news that these switching systems and the sensory systems, and this has parallels to things that you and I have talked about with computer systems on vehicles and stuff like that. So we must be vigilant, because as we develop and campaign and want these forms of transportation, hell, I mean, even if we're riding space trains, you know, out to other planets or whatever, you know, we're going to want to build them safely.
I just would be happy to be able to take a train to Chicago quickly, you know. But the space trains, I love the idea. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You're basically riding at 200 miles an hour on a little rail, and hopefully will be a continuous rail throughout the entire journey. It does seem fantastic to even believe that works, but it does. And it's pretty safe and certainly economical as far as fuel goes. So, I hope to see more of it in this country. I think we're making steps, just not nearly enough and not nearly quickly enough. Hey, you know what? We're out of time. We have some more Ukraine radio to go out with. But any final comments on Ukraine before we go to the next part next week where we're actually walking around in the streets?
Oh, I would love to go back to Kiev and do more stuff there. I mean, it's an incredibly high technology place and different place, but very fun. I liked Poland too, and I don't know about Belarus. I got to think about that for a while.
Well, like I said, you need that counterweight to really appreciate the good things. But yeah, you know, I the people of Belarus, I hope it works out for them, and I hope they get something more vibrant and lively. They deserve it. They really do. They've worked hard for this. All right, Kyle, great talking to you as always. Hopefully we'll see you next week as well. And try to stay out of the snow there in Seattle.
Yes, the specter of the torrential snowstorm right. will not stop me.
Snowmageddon number two.
Be prepared and keep my head above the drift.
All right, and we'll be ducking raindrops here. For Off the Wall, Emmanuel and Kyle from the Ukraine, have yourselves a good night.
Хвилю вітальній програмі на замовлення «Не слухаюся країни». Ви як вважаєте, чи є війні, чи можливо, так воно і є. Перша 19 на студійному ледійному годиннику. Ідемо далі. 0800-3525-025 номер нашого пейджера. Часу все менше і менше залишається, друзі мої. Тож, якщо є бажання щось таке тепленьке сказати своїм друзям, товаришам, треба покваптися трішечки. Власника мобільних телефонів наберете короткий номер 514, залишайте повідомлення для абонента «Радіо Мелодія». І з будь-якого мобільного СМС прямо зараз можна відправити на номер 4707. Головне, на початку слово «код мелодія». Не забудьте, наберіть обов'язково. І не забувайте про те, що ми з вами реалізуємо будь-які музичні фантазії лише в рамках мелодійного простору. Мелодія, доброї вам ночі. Передайте, будь ласка, привіт і поставте для Христини, яка їде зараз у поїзді, гарну пісню. Невідомо від кого Христина, але приймайте від усіх нас величезний полум'яний привіт.
Жизни лишь раз. И никогда, запомни, никогда не постучит твое окно беда. Пока с тобой буду я.
It's Finn with you, Finn's Revolution, until 9 p.m. We have special guests tonight, Mr. Jeremy Varone, who will be joining us, talking about Guantanamo closings and NDAA and et cetera, et cetera. And it's the birthday of Mr. Steve Rowe, so stay tuned.
Bob Longman with a WUSB concert billboard for Tuesday, January 10th. The On Your Radar series continues at the Living Room with Roosevelt Dime, Amber Rubarth, and John Flynn. That's at 7 p.m., the Living Room in Manhattan. Your WUSB concert billboard for January 11th. The Little Willies featuring Lee Alexander, Jim Capilongo, Nora Jones, Richard Julian, and Dan Reeser will be at the Bell House in Brooklyn at 8 p.m. Food Will Win the War at Knitting Factory, Brooklyn, 7:30 p.m. James Maddock will be at the Canal Room at 7:30 p.m. in Manhattan. Your WUSB concert billboard for Friday, January 13th. Ramsey Lewis at B.B. King's in Manhattan, 7:30 and 10 p.m. Joe Rock and the All-Stars will be at Chow Baby in Massapequa at 9 p.m. The Bobcats will be at the Blue Parrot in Massapequa at 8 p.m. The WUSB concert billboard for Saturday, January 14th. The Holmes Brothers will be at the Bolton Center at 8 p.m. Mark Cohn will be at the Fairfield Theater in Stage 1 in Fairfield, Connecticut, 7 and 10 p.m. The Mighty Sparrows will be at B.B. King's in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Wax Phantom, Bastard Cut, Unwelcome Guests, Burning Bridges, White Whale, Button Up, and more will be at the Isetaka VFW Hall at 8 p.m. Ahmad Ali will be at the Lafayette Grill and Bar at 2 p.m. And the Meadowgrass Bluegrass Band will be at Jake's Tavern in East Meadow at 8:30 p.m. Your concert billboard for Sunday, January 15th, Mark Cohn will be at the Bolton Center in Bayshore at 7 p.m. And Cheryl Wheeler will be at the Fairfield Theater, Stage 1, Fairfield, Connecticut, at 7:30 p.m. And that's your WUSB concert billboard for this week.
Yeah. Yeah.